Welcome to Smashterpieces, a casual walk through the history of the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate roster. My name is Joe.
And I'm Matt.
And if you're new here to this show, what we are doing is we are playing one game for every character in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. And today's episode is actually a continuation slash conclusion of our game representing fighter number 17, Princess Zelda. It's the 1991 Super Nintendo game, Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past.
That's why part two is in the name of the episode.
Yeah. Our first Zelda game of the show, our only 2D Zelda game of the show.
Which might have been a mistake, because I feel like the 2D Zelda games are, like, way more worth checking out than we gave them credit for.
Yeah, but I think, I don't remember if we covered this in an episode. We might have talked about this in the last episode. In fact, I'm pretty sure we did, but it's less that we didn't think the 2D Zeldas were worth checking out, and more, Smash pulls a lot more from the 3D Zeldas than it does the 2D Zeldas.
Yes, that is true.
Zelda being based on her Link to the Past design is the first time any of the characters have been based on a 2D Zelda design in Smash history, basically.
Which is kind of insane.
It's weird, but like it makes sense, because when Smash 64 came out, the most recent Zelda game was Ocarina of Time. When Melee came out, the most recent Zelda game was Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. When Brawl came out, the most recent one was Twilight Princess. So, and with Ultimate, they made a big deal of making sure that all the Zelda characters are based on a different Zelda game, which is something they haven't done in the past.
If that's what they were going for, they didn't succeed.
They sort of did, because, I mean,
no,
everybody's based on a different game.
That's not true.
Yes, they are! Link is based on Breath of the Wild, Ganon is based on Ocarina of Time, Young Link is based off Majora's Mask.
No,
Toon Link
based
is based off
Ocarina
Wind Waker,
of Time.
Zelda is based on Link to the Past.
And Sheik's based off Breath of the Wild.
And Sheik is based off Breath of the Wild.
And Young Link
Sheik
based off
counts.
Ocarina of Time.
He's based off of both.
He really
they're the
isn't,
same.
But okay.
They're the same character. But, yeah, they pull from 3D games a lot more than they pull from 2D games. And my theory was half the most recent games were always the 3D games when Smash was coming out. And also, like I said in the last episode, if you're going to make a 3D model, it's a lot easier to base that off of a different 3D model than it is to base it off of a 2D sprite.
Yeah, that's the main reason. Yes.
Yes. So, it's not surprising to me that this is the only 2D game on the list, but it is certainly indicative of how Smash deals with Zelda characters, I think.
Well, in the meantime, last time we got to talk about the game, like, in a more general sense, this time, we really got into the dungeons.
Yeah. So the last episode went all the way up to the Dark Palace. That was the last dungeon that I had done, and the second last dungeon that you had done at that time. So mm-hmm. I guess let's go ahead and start with going from the Swamp Palace all the way to Ganon's Tower, which kind of, it's a little over halfway through the game. I believe you made the deduction Swamp Palace is the exact halfway point.
Skull Woods, I think, wasn't it?
I think it was Swamp Palace, because our goal was for both of us to have finished Swamp Palace, and I couldn't do that.
Our goal was to get to Skull Woods.
Was it?
Yeah.
I don't remember, to be honest.
There's three Light World dungeons, and then up
seven,
to... And seven.
Seven,
so
dungeons.
10 total, so it would be... it would be after Swamp Palace.
Yeah.
Well, no. 8 total, if you count Ganon's Castle. 8 Dark World to count Ganon's Castle, but I don't know how to count that, so whatever.
We'll get to it. But let's start with the Swamp Palace, which was... Alright, so we both had weirdly different experiences with this. I don't dislike the Swamp Palace, but...
I didn't get to watch your stream, and I don't really know what your problem with it was.
My main problem with the Swamp Palace was that it throws a lot of enemies at you. Constantly. Just constantly. You're in a room and it's shooting shit at you, or there's fucking shit flying all over, or there's a ton of enemies in that room, and it's just constant. Like, those bubble enemies are probably one of my least favorite enemies in the game. And just, that was my only real issue with the Swamp Palace. Other than that, like, I like the boss. The boss is, I mean, it's a boss that I fought in other Zelda games before.
Well, this was the first one it was in.
Yeah, obviously. This is the first time. This is the origin of that kind of Zelda boss. And I liked it. And overall, I like the design and the puzzles of the Swamp Palace fine. It's just, it throws so much shit at you all the time. That is the one dungeon where I never felt like I had a chance to just sort of stand and think for a second. I had to always keep moving or else I would get hit by something.
I think there are places that you can kind of chill for a bit and reevaluate, but I don't know. I guess we just had different experiences with it. I didn't find it to be a problem. And as far as the layout goes, I actually really liked that dungeon a lot. I thought it was one of the more interesting dungeons because of like how interconnected it was. Like, you're looping back on the same rooms a lot, and those same rooms are very modified by things that you're doing in other rooms to change them and make you go through them differently. And that's something that I really like in dungeons, when they don't feel like they're a line of rooms that you're just walking through. They feel like they're, you know, a real space that you're exploring.
Well, I do like how the dungeon is wildly changed the instant you get the hookshot, which is the most, like, that is the most traversal item you get in the whole game. And it basically completely changes how you go through a lot of rooms in that game.
Yeah, no, this is also the most traversal-based hookshot in the series, too. Like, this is a crazy good hookshot.
Yeah, and obviously this was, I think this was the first hookshot? There wasn't a hookshot in Zelda 2, was there?
I think this was the first.
Okay, I barely know anything about Zelda 2. But yeah, I think it's overall, I don't dislike it as a whole. I don't know. I didn't enjoy myself largely in it, but I don't think that's because it was a bad dungeon. I just think I was not having a good time. But on an entirely different note, Skull Woods might be one of the cooler dungeons I've ever played in a Zelda game in general.
They were really experimenting with the formula with that dungeon in a way that they kind of never did again.
Like, I can't think of another dungeon that works this way.
No, like with like where you physically leave the dungeon and enter it from a bunch of different points. Like, the closest I can think is Desert Palace earlier in this very game.
Yeah, but that's still like at a completely different level from just Skull Woods in general, because it's just the fact that half the dungeon is the overworld has one flaw to it, but it's a small flaw, and as long as you don't fuck up, it doesn't become a major flaw.
Yeah, just don't die in the overworld portion.
Don't die in the overworld or it throws you all the way back to the pyramid, which is a little shitty, but also you died. It's not like it's the game's fault.
I think to some extent that was programming limitations.
That was very much, it had to have been programming limitations. I think it would have screwed up some stuff in general if they would have set that specific spot in the overworld to specifically send you to the beginning of the area or something. That being said, yeah, Skull Woods is really cool. It's a really cool dungeon.
I think also because of the way that it changes your entry point constantly, it was also the best point to introduce the Wallmasters.
Yeah.
Like, it introduces this new enemy in the place where they are, like, they're the least punishing.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, Wallmasters in this game aren't super punishing in general. Like, I didn't get caught by them very often, so maybe that's why I feel that way. But they didn't seem to set you back as far as I'm used to from later Zelda games.
Well, that's also a consequence of the difference between the dungeons being more based on, more a space that you're exploring versus, like, a gauntlet of rooms that you're going through. In later Zelda games, they really leverage more towards the gauntlet of rooms that you're going through rather than a space that you're exploring. And when it's a more open space that you're exploring, it's easier to get to any particular point in the dungeon from the front door.
Yeah. And I think Skull Woods is probably my favorite dungeon in the game. Like, by far.
It was really cool.
It's super creative. It's super unique. It's a good time. Its boss leaves a little bit to be desired, but it and the boss that came right after it have the same issue where we were describing them as, oh, we're playing a bullet hell game now, I guess. Okay. Cool. I don't think the boss is bad. It's just, oh my god, fuck, there's a lot. There's a lot to pay attention to in that boss.
Oh, yeah. That's, like, there's just a whole lot going on there, and I'm not the biggest fan of it.
God help you if you don't have any magic, or when you walk in there, because, gah.
I forget what exactly I did to mitigate it, but it definitely felt like kind of a cheat when I managed to beat that boss.
A fire rod. The fire rod does a ton of damage to that thing.
Did I?
Oh, yeah. Both of us.
Was that Skull Woods? I thought that was a different dungeon.
Nah, the moth. The moth is the boss in Skull Woods.
You're right.
And the strat is have the fire rod, have some magic, and just hit it a bunch of times, and then it dies. There's not a whole bunch to it. There's not a whole bunch to most of the bosses in this game, and that's mostly due to, I mean, there's only so much they could do on the SNES, but what they did work with what they had, and they did very well with most of the bosses. I don't really think there are any bosses in this game that I would call bad. I have some problems with some of them, but, like, they're all relatively fun to fight. They all have their own gimmicks, though some of them are superior to others. And I don't know. They Zelda boss fights are always super fun, and obviously they got a lot more unique and interesting as time went on, when they had more ability to, like, do special stuff. And I don't know. I think, obviously, Link to the Past, there's a very clear line from there to stuff like the boss of the Arbiter's Grounds in Twilight Princess. If that makes sense.
Yes. And this, I think this was before when every boss had to be beaten by the item you get from the dungeon.
Yes, it was. There are only, like, two bosses in the entire game. I think the boss of the Swamp Palace is the only one that's coming to mind where...
Dark Palace, like, too.
Is Dark... What was the boss of the Dark Palace?
Hammer.
I don't remember. Hammer, yeah. So those two are the only ones I can really think of that you need that... the item that you got in that dungeon in order to beat that boss. You can't do it any other way. But the rest are just, like... I mean, if you use the bow against the Minotaur statues, then it'll do more damage, but you can still fight it with your sword.
While we're still talking about dungeons, I also want to bring up the way that the big key is different in Link to the Past than every other game in the series, where it's not the boss key. It's just a particular key that opens specific things. And that, like, rather than being, like, the last thing you do is use the boss key, instead it, like, separates all the dungeons into, like, two acts, in a way. Which I thought was really cool, and I kind of wish that the rest of the series did that.
I can see why they moved away from it, but yeah, I think it's a really interesting way of doing things, especially, like, it opens the big chests. You can't get the item until you get the big key. Specifically. Meanwhile, like, in a lot of later Zelda games, it'd be, you get the item, now the dungeon starts for real.
And I never felt like boss keys later in the franchise really were worth having, because for the most part, they were on the path to the boss anyway. And having the big key open, like, usually the big key is there to open a chest or a door that you have already seen previously in the dungeon. So it adds to, like, it adds to that, you know, this is a defined space that you're exploring rather than a gauntlet that you're moving through. And it also makes it kind of more exciting when, like, you see the big chest or the big key door and you recognize, okay, this is where I'm going to come back to. So when you get that big key, you're like, all right, let's go do this. I know exactly where to go. And it just feels good to sort of have that two-act structure in the dungeons, I think. I really think it helps and makes them feel more like real spaces, whereas later dungeons in the series felt more like video game dungeons.
Speaking of keys, I feel like this is a good time for me to bring this up. I got one big criticism about the dungeons in this game, and that is small keys. There are so many rooms in these dungeons that... So let me put it this way. There is a thing that is usually said about what makes a bad horror game. Now, bear with me. We're not talking about a horror game here, obviously. Unless you're really scared of Zelda enemies, which... More power to you, I guess. But in a bad horror game, one of the telltale signs is you get a key to open a door, to get a key to open a door, to get a key to open a door, to get a key. And I don't know if maybe I'm just nuts, but I felt like there was a lot of that in some of the dungeons where it's just like, all right, I'm in this room. Oh, I found the key to open the door that's in the room.
Boy, if you're not liking that, then you're gonna be in for a rude awakening for the rest of the Zelda series.
But, like, you'd get it. That's the thing, is, like, sometimes you'd walk into a room full of enemies, and then you kill all the enemies. Oh, but there's a locked door. Oh, but I found a key in the chest sitting next to the locked door. So what was the point of that? Just have it be one of those doors that opens when you kill all the enemies.
That is, like, actually, like, later games in the Zelda franchise are way more egregious with that specific thing. This is actually one of the better games in the series for that complaint.
Oh, boy. I don't remember that being the case, but I haven't played a Zelda game proper. This is the first Zelda game proper I've played in a couple years. So, who knows? Maybe I'll remember that later. But I don't know. Just something about... And also, like... Just the fact that sometimes you'd find keys under pots, that's also a weird thing that I don't think the games ever do again.
I liked that, though. I kind of thought that was good. Like, it breaks up the pacing more than just, like, oh, you get the key in this room by solving the puzzle or beating the enemies. It's like, oh, well, it adds more variety to what you're doing.
I guess. But getting back to the dungeons, the next dungeon would be Gargoyle's Domain, which...
I don't think we need to go over each one.
We don't need to go over each one specifically, but, like, Gargoyle's Domain at least has one of the most famous parts of...
It says a lot that I don't know what dungeon you're talking about.
Blind.
I thought that was called Thief's Town.
No, it's called Gargoyle's Domain, because you walk in through a gargoyle.
Okay, yeah.
According to Zelda Dungeon, it is called the Gargoyle's Domain.
Whatever. That dungeon does have a really cool, iconic part of the game, and it's the only thing worth remembering about that entire dungeon.
Yeah, there's not much in there. You've got the Ice Palace, which sure is a thing. I agree with you that it would be a, like, very good dungeon if not for the fact that ice floors aren't fun.
The ice cavern is almost incredible. Like, straight up, I hate those slippery floors. They are absolutely terrible. But if you took them out, that would be one of the best dungeons in the franchise, I think.
Just look, I realize that I need to give them the benefit of the doubt. This was the first game like this. Like, the closest to a game like this before this was the original Legend of Zelda. Which, I think this builds off enough of to be considered, like, the first game like this. Ice floors have never been fun, are not fun in any game, in any genre.
They really ruin this dungeon.
Stop it! Stop it! This is for, this exact, me saying this is for current game developers. I can't say anything to them back then. This game was made before I was born. Stop it.
Just never, ever do, never do ice theme again.
Ice theme is fine. Ice themed levels are pretty and nice usually, but ice floors, I get it. Ice is slippery in real life. You walk on ice, ice makes slip. I get it. But it's that doesn't make it fun. That's my rant about ice floors. Misery Meyer, I don't even remember anything about it.
I don't either. I'm looking at my VOD right now. It took me more time to find the entrance to Misery Meyer than it did to actually play through Misery Meyer.
There's nothing of note in the whole dungeon.
Yeah, no, the dungeon, what's even the item for Misery Meyer?
The cane. Cane of Samaria.
The cane, what the hell?
You use it in two dungeons.
Use it in two dungeons, and neither of them are Misery Meyer.
That's true. That you don't actually at any point really need it in Misery Meyer, now that I think about it. I'm sure it's useful somewhere, but I don't remember using it there all that much.
Yeah, no, you use it way more in Turtle Rock, and you use it plenty in Ganon's Tower.
And also, the boss of Misery Meyer is bad. Maybe not bad, it's just, it's boring. There's nothing to it. There's nothing to it. There's no gimmick, even. It sure is a dungeon. But speaking of...
Is it a dungeon?
I guess.
Is it really a dungeon?
But speaking of the real dungeon the Cane of Samaria is used in, time to make some people mad. Let's talk about Turtle Rock. Turtle Rock's a bad dungeon. It's the only dungeon in the game that I consider outright bad.
Are we going to make people mad about that? Is this dungeon, like, well-regarded?
I had a couple people mad at me for not liking Turtle Rock.
That sucks, because it's horse shit.
It's a bad dungeon. I don't want to say that about any other... Like, I can't say that about any other dungeon in this entire game. The dungeons... There are dungeons I don't like, but... Turtle Rock is the one that I don't like, and also I don't like because I think it is bad.
And people are going to be like, oh, no, it's not that hard. It's like, I don't care if it's hard. It's boring. It's not fun. I didn't have fun. It's bad.
That one room where it's dark and there are the fire bars and you got to do the fucking platform, that room sucks. That room, I don't know how else to say it, that room sucks.
Yeah, Turtle Rock is like... Like, when I can imagine that people are going to think, like, part of the reason that we don't like Turtle Rock is just its difficulty. And it's not that it's difficult. It's that it's tedious. It's not, like, I don't feel clever getting through Turtle Rock. I feel like I just threw shit at the wall long enough. And, like, it's not hard to figure out how to avoid those, like, rotating fire pillars in that one room, but avoiding them takes forever.
Yeah.
It's so boring.
It's boring, and also just, there's no need for those rooms aren't a puzzle. That's not a puzzle. That's not how puzzles work. That's just, it's on a track, and I was never super clear on what the fucking rules were, even, with where it moved. I couldn't get it to act the way I wanted at any point.
It's like, it's the intersections that have, like, the square over them, instead of just being, like, the pathway continues across each other, those are the ones that you're allowed to move on. And you have to, like, be holding as you're crossing it. And... That room is bad. Those rooms are bad because of, like, the obstacles are just boring and they take forever. And the room, like, that's the pipe maze, that one I think is also bad because, again, that's not a puzzle. That's just trial and error and then memorize the right one.
There's no way to know where the pipe leads. You can't see it.
There's no way. It's not a puzzle. It's trial and error and memorization. It's not fun.
Yeah, Turtle Rock is my least favorite dungeon in the game. It sounds like it's yours as well. It's not a good dungeon.
And also, those fucking eyeballs on the wall that
shoot
the lasers.
Yeah, those can fuck off as well.
They don't even follow their own rules. Like, obviously, once you get the mirror shield, they're a non-issue. But there's that one room that teaches you that the eyeballs, when you're looking away from them, they don't shoot at you. And then you're like, ah, so I charge my sword so I'm facing this direction and walk backwards. And then you got that room that it seems to be, oh, these ones alternate, so some of them will shoot at me when I'm looking at them, and some of them will shoot at me when I'm not looking at them. So you alternate, and then some of them just shoot at you all the time.
Yeah, it's...
What the fuck? Like, if that sounds wrong to you, go watch my VOD and tell me what I was doing wrong, because as far as I can tell, Those eyeballs just break their own rules.
There's a lot of stuff in this game, and that's a problem we've pointed out a lot, being that this game has a real problem with it changes the rules randomly sometimes. Like, we've talked about that with the bomb floors and the bomb walls. And the bomb walls, there's supposedly some way to tell what's real and what's not, and fine. Okay, cool. The bomb floors, there's not. There's a spot, I think it's in... I want to say it's in either the... It's in the Ice Palace, I'm pretty sure, where there's a bunch of cracked floor, just a shit ton of it. Like, at least four or five tiles of it just around. One of them breaks into a pit that you can fall through. None of the others do, but all of them look exactly the same.
There's also the big key door in Turtle Rock, by the way. When you see it from the north side, it's not a big key door. So, if, like, yes, when you see it from the south side, it is a big key door. But in the pipe maze room, if you see that door and see that it just looks like a regular small key door, and you register that to your memory and just mentally ignore the graphic of it the next time you see it, that's what happened to me. I got stuck in that dungeon for like 10 minutes because there was nowhere, I felt like there was nowhere that I could go. And then one of our friends in the chat was like, well, there's the big key door right there. And I'm like, it's from one side, it's not a big key door.
Yeah,
the visual clarity just falls apart, and it's all focused on this one dungeon. This one dungeon's garbage.
Yeah, I just... And then, to be fair to Turtle Rock, the boss is pretty neat, but it has a problem that I'm going to get into a real rant on in a bit, but I do want to at least say, I like the boss of Turtle Rock. It's neat, it's... It does have one massive problem that isn't connected to the one I want to talk about later, being, you pointed out, and I didn't even think of this, it requires the ice rod. It is the only thing in the entire game that requires the ice rod. The ice rod is, up until that point, a completely optional item, not found in a dungeon, not hinted at where it is at any point. But you need it for that boss. You can't beat that boss without it.
Yeah, like, imagine someone just gets to this point of the game and doesn't even know that the ice rod exists.
That's a very likely possibility, because nobody ever mentions the ice rod's existence. As far as I'm aware, no NPC mentions the ice rod's existence anywhere. This is like the definition of, oh, I guess I had to have Nintendo power.
I think one of the NPCs in the area where you get the ice rod mentions it.
See, I don't even remember where that is.
This boss and the final boss are just, the solution was to have a subscription to Nintendo Power.
That part is bad. I think in concept, the boss is cool. I think that he is a neat boss. He's a two-headed turtle that has, or a three-headed turtle, sorry. One of his heads is red and one of it's blue. You gotta hit the blue one with the fire rod and then you can swipe at it with your sword. Even though most logical people, which is what both of us assumed before we realized otherwise, would think, oh, I can only damage the blue one with the fire rod. I can only damage the red one with the ice rod.
Which I don't know.
It's not the case, because it's that stuns them and you can hit them with your sword after that. But I...
Like, that happened to me, but I don't know if I want to knock the game for that, because I don't know if that's just me making weird assumptions, because nothing else in the game or later Zelda games is like that, honestly.
I guess that's true. I don't know. That's also a thought that I had, though. I think it's worthwhile pointing that out, at least. But no, I think the boss of Turtle Rock is neat. I enjoy him. He's cool. At the very least. There is that, at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Ganon and his tower. I don't think there's anything really big to talk about in Ganon's tower. It's just sort of a run-of-the-mill dungeon.
It's not bad, but it's not... Like,
it's not bad, but there's nothing really noteworthy that happens in Ganon's tower.
Yeah, it just kind of is. It's not bad, but it's not particularly good. It just kind of is.
Yeah. It's kind of disappointing that it doesn't even get its own music.
That was really disappointing, actually.
We're going to have a lot to talk about the soundtrack, and by that I mean... We're not
going to have lots to talk about.
Which in itself is something to talk about, I guess. But first, I want to talk about Ganon himself. So,
well, for me, the whole thing with Ganon is that it's the same as the Ice Rod. The solution was to have a subscription to Nintendo Power for the Silver Arrows.
Because, I guess. Do you need the Silver Arrows to damage him?
Yes, you need the Silver Arrows.
Wait, what? I didn't know that. I thought they were just an upgrade.
No, you must have the Silver Arrows.
Oh, fuck. That's shitty. That's
the solution to beating Ganon. And like, if you fall down the hole, then it's like, oh, you need to hit Ganon with the Silver Arrow. And it doesn't tell you where to find the Silver Arrow.
I mean, to be fair, it doesn't tell you anything about where to find them. It's close by, but that information doesn't help if you don't know where.
No, it doesn't say close by, I think.
Well, no, it doesn't say close by. I know that it's close by. The location is close by is what I mean. And
yeah,
that's
but like
sort
in,
of helpful.
In 1991, like, the game says to you, like, you need the Silver Arrows. And your response is, what the fuck are the Silver Arrows?
Yeah.
And the game doesn't tell you until you have already fought and lost to the boss. If you lose to the boss in a very specific way. It's not if you die, it's if you fall down the hole and get knocked to the bottom floor. And then there's a Sahasrara stone that says you need to get the Silver Arrows.
So here's my issue with the Ganon fight, and it's not the Silver Arrows, because I didn't know that until just now. So, wow, that kind of sucks. But my issue is this, and it's an issue that the boss of Turtle Rock also sort of has to a sort of lesser extent. The third phase of Ganon's fight, he turns the room dark, and there are two torches. If those torches aren't lit, you cannot see Ganon. And that's also the spot where you got to shoot him with the Silver Arrows. So that ties into that a little bit. Now, obviously, the fastest way to do this would be to use the Fire Rod, but you've also got the Lantern. Problem is, both of those use magic. And it's not inherently bad that this phase exists. It's just that if you happen to have run out of magic during this fight, you might as well have died. You might as well have lost the fight. You don't run out of health, but if you run out of magic during this fight or the Skull Woods, or not the Skull Woods, the Turtle Rock boss fight, you might as well have just died. Because there's no coming back from that. You now cannot beat the boss.
I would actually respect the game more if when you run out of magic, Ganon just has a dialogue box that says, fuck you, and he instant kills you.
I would also sort of respect that. Or throws you into the hole, which is why I assume that hole is hole around the edge is there to begin with, because it leads to a fairy fountain. Well, no, it doesn't lead to a fairy fountain, but there's a fairy fountain right outside, which you'd know about if you had Nintendo Power, because that's where you get the Silver Arrows. And you can get bottles of green potion there. But that's not my problem. That doesn't really mitigate the fact that the boss was designed in such a way that if I run out of magic, I lose.
I think I agree with you, but I think it's weird to bring that up with regards to Ganon instead of the Turtle Rock boss, because it's way more egregious in Turtle Rock than it is for Ganon.
Well, the thing with Ganon, the reason I think it's more egregious with Ganon is because I can clearly see something that would fix it. And that is, why does the Lantern use magic?
It needs to use something, I guess.
No, it doesn't. It can't be used offensively. It's used for lighting torches. That is the only use for the magic lantern in the entire game. Why does it use magic?
It shouldn't. You're right on that point.
It should not. The fire rod obviously uses magic. It should. It's a thing that can be used offensively as well as something that can light the torches. And it's the faster way to light the torches, so obviously that's where you would go first. But if the lantern didn't use magic, once you ran out of the fire rod, well, your punishment is now lighting the torches is slower, but at least you still have a chance. You still have a way to fight the boss. And that's why I think it's so egregious. You couldn't say that about the Turtle Rock boss, because you need the fire rod for that. You can't use the lantern for that. But you can use the lantern for this, but if you run out of magic, no, you can't. And there's no reason for the lantern to use magic. And I don't, that's my issue with the Ganon fight. That's why it popped up so much harder for me during Ganon.
Which, that's fair. And like, yeah, like I don't mind having something in the boss fight that is like, if you run out of this, you're done. But I do mind that it doesn't respect you enough to just fucking kill you at that point. Like,
I think that this was a lesson they learned from this game, because later Zelda games, when you fight a boss, there is always a way, something happens somewhere to get a little bit more health or to replenish some of your magic in the games that have magic. There's always a way for that.
Yeah, and it doesn't need to baby me. Like, it doesn't need to just hand me magic. Like, it can make me work for it by, like, having to dodge attacks and, like, go over to some grass to cut it and get that.
And the thing that future Zelda games tend to do is, like, there's columns or something that you have to bait the boss into destroying it, and then that will cause, like, some hearts or some green potion to pop out, and you can use that. Like, yeah, obviously it shouldn't just be, oh, you're running out of hearts and running out of magic. Let me drop some from the sky for you.
Which the Wind Waker does.
Yeah, but, like, there should be some method.
Yeah, it doesn't need to make it easy on me. Like, I'm not asking for it to be easier. I'm just asking for it to not waste my time.
Yeah, that's my main issue. And a lot of people... A lot of our mutual friends sort of saw me complaining about that specific gimmick and that specific part, and basically thought I was saying, like, and that's why the entire Ganon fight is bad. It's not. The Ganon fight's actually kind of cool overall.
Well, the Ganon fight's bad because it's boring.
I liked the Ganon fight overall. I don't think it's anything amazing, but I liked it.
I liked the first phase more than anything, but the phases after that just have so much more waiting around than anything else that... I just think it's a boring fight, honestly. There's a lot of evading and maneuvering that you can do in the first phase, and then the second phase, it's so high risk to get more than two hits on in any given cycle. And the same for the third phase. It's just, unless you want to get super risky, it just takes forever, and I just think it's boring.
My only real issue is the torch thing, which, again, like I said, that's not a bad gimmick on its own. It's just, if it weren't for the fact that if the lantern didn't use magic, that would fix the whole boss for me. Or at least that would fix that aspect of the boss. And that's really all I have to say on that, to be honest.
So, We've been saying a lot of negative things just because, like, it's really easy to say negative things. Like, it's easier to complain about things than it is to, like, bring up specific things that we liked. But before we go into the soundtrack, which is going to be more complaining about the game, I just want to, like, take a moment to say I think we both really liked this game.
Oh, I enjoyed the hell out of this game. I think I like other 2D Zelda games better, but that's just because they improved upon what this game gave them.
Yes. Later Zelda games are standing on the shoulders of giants, and this is one of the giants.
Yes.
Like, the Zelda series as we have it today would not be possible without Link to the Past. Like, maybe Breath of the Wild, because they went back to the original game's formula. But there is a reason that every other Zelda game looks back on Link to the Past, and even if it does have some flaws and they didn't get everything right, they established so much that really works in this game, and there are some things, like, you know, the way that the big key separates the dungeons into two acts that I actually think is the best in Link to the Past out of the whole series.
And it's, we also just have to, you have to remember, and I feel like people don't think we point this out enough, and I think we point it out plenty, but I guess I'll point it out more. Obviously, we understand that this game has flaws because it didn't really have a template to work off of. Other Zelda games did, and they built on those templates, like you said. They stand on the shoulders of giants. This is one of those giants, but this giant is old. It came from a different time. We didn't have all the knowledge we have today. Obviously, when we're talking about these flaws, we're talking about them through a lens of we have seen the lessons that were learned from these specific flaws. Because there's a very easy point, especially for this game, there's a very easy place to point and say, yeah, other Zelda games improved upon this specific thing. Or they might have, for some reason, decided that this specific thing wasn't a thing they wanted to keep up with, so they didn't do it anymore. And it's, I personally feel like if we were only looking at it from the lens of, well, what if we were playing this game in 1991? I think that kind of, to me, that would be like ignoring the lessons that were learned from the flaws in the game.
Yes, and there's also a certain aspect of when it comes to game design, if you're doing your job right, people won't be sure you've done anything at all. Like, good game design is game design that you don't even notice, because it just lets you get immersed in the experience and just have, and like, just enjoy the game. Typically, you only really notice particular things about game design when something's going wrong and it's frustrating you. And that's kind of why we spend a lot of time being more negative on games like this, even though I think this was a really, really good game.
Well, like, it's, I think you said this during the Mega Man 2 episode as well, where it's like, boy, we sure have a lot more to talk about when we're talking about flaws or like a bad game. We had way more to talk about in Kid Icarus than we did to have, than we had to talk about in like Mega Man. Cause there was so much more to point out.
You also don't need me to tell you why Link to the Past is good. You already know why Link to the Past is good.
This is possibly one of the most famous, prolific games on our entire list.
Yes.
Like,
if you take 20 years of The Legend of Zelda, boil it down to a distilled formula, and you have Link to the Past.
Yeah, and I think our next game is also up there and being as prolific, but it's not as mainstream culturally permeating. Like, Zelda is Zelda because of this.
Yes, 100%.
So that's, I think, yeah, I agree. I think that's important to point out that we did enjoy this game. We're ragging on it a lot, but that's just because we noticed flaws in what is otherwise a very, very good game. Let's talk about the soundtrack. So we can keep that train rolling. This game. All right, so.
Soundtrack's bad. I mean, it's not bad, it's just boring.
It's not bad, but there's not much to talk about in it. Like, there's not much notable music.
This soundtrack just kind of, like, it's like Ganon's Tower. It's not bad, but it's not particularly good. It just kind of is.
And I understand that, like, a friend of mine, while I was talking to him about this game yesterday, pointed out, like, the music was probably the biggest thing on the entire cartridge, like, file size-wise. And he's not wrong. Music files are fucking huge. When it comes to games, like, the only other thing that's probably bigger than music is, like, FMVs. And that's it. Like video files. But obviously, the Super Nintendo didn't have those. I don't know why I'm going into this. Point is, music is huge, and we pointed that out. It's like, so there's not much of it. And I was like, yeah, but the problem isn't that there's not much of it. The problem is that what's there isn't really memorable.
We got some good stuff out of this. Zelda's Lullaby actually comes from this game, and that is one of the more iconic Zelda songs. The Dark World theme is incredible. hidden mountain and forest is incredible. And then past that, it's like the stuff that didn't make it into Smash largely isn't worth remembering, I think.
There's also the Prince of Darkness, which is the Ganon fight theme, which I know you think is boring. I kind of like it, but it shows up in other Zelda games. It's shown up in future Zelda games in various forms as well, and I think it's worth pointing to that one as well. And obviously, I guess, the Hyrule Field theme, though it's just the Zelda theme. I don't know what else to say about that.
I just learned that the Fairy Fountain theme came from this game. I thought it was from Zelda 1.
I also kind of thought that, but I'm not surprised to find out it specifically came from this game, because I'm pretty sure Zelda 1 had, like, two songs, and that was Dungeon and Overworld. There's just not... And also, if I might be so bold as to point it out, hey guys, why is the shop theme bad?
Yeah, no, so when I'm saying, like, oh, yeah, for, it's, you know, this, the songs aren't bad, they're just not particularly good, that one's bad. Like, that one's really bad.
It's, like, it's, and from a series that would go on to have, like, really, really, really good shop music, it's surprising. Like, this, the soundtrack being underwhelming is less, I guess... a criticism and more, I'm just surprised. I'm really surprised. Because when that friend of mine was talking to me, he pointed out, like, well, I mean, Super Mario World doesn't have a lot of music either. And it doesn't. But the music it does have is memorable and fun to listen to and good. And I can't say the same about Link to the Past. And I'm just really surprised about that more than anything else.
Yeah. Like the take the song that's at the beginning of the game. It's in the intro video, and it's when you're in the overworld at the beginning and in Hyrule Castle at the beginning. That's just, like, the same couple chords ramping up over and over and over.
Yeah.
It's strange.
Especially when you think, like, this is a Koji Kondo thing still. Like, he still was in charge. It's just... Again, I don't want to call the soundtrack bad. It's just there's nothing really there. It's weird.
Yeah. Like, Dark World's an incredible song. Hidden Mountain and Village is an incredible song. Zelda's Lullaby is an incredible song.
Kakariko Village obviously comes from this game as well. like, songs in this game went to other Zelda games, but I don't think it's an accident that most people think, like, oh, that song originated in Ocarina, or, oh, that song originated in later Zelda game. I don't know.
Yeah. It's... I don't know. I don't know what happened here.
It's a mystery, I guess. Well, do you got anything else to say about Link to the Past?
No, that's really it. My biggest problem with the game was that it just got kind of exhausting with how much nothing you did outside of the dungeons. So, pacing-wise, it just kind of felt like the game was just, like, an endless string of dungeons. But I those dungeons were incredible.
Except for Turtle Rock.
So, except Turtle Rock. And I loved playing the game. It just, it was a little on the monotonous side, so it kind of, there were just some points where I was just like, I need to step away.
I think a lot of it is also just like, we've played better Zelda games now. I guess better is not the word I'm looking for, but we've played Zelda games that have taken the formula of Link to the Past and improved upon it. And are just generally, I think, better put together games. But that is not to say that this game is bad. This game is incredible. It did incredible things for video games in general. It is a historically important... And so, like, this is our second most historically important game, I think. Or our most historically important game, because the last game that I would call extremely historically important would have been Duck Hunt. But Duck Hunt was boring, and it was historically important for a different reason. This one actually sort of changed the face of video games in a way.
Yeah. This is a huge game. And it's like I said, the Zelda franchise is standing on the shoulders of giants, and this is one of the giants.
So we should probably jump on into our conversation about the next game, which was actually recorded at a different time.
Hooray.
Which I'm going to throw in. Obviously, last time we talked to you guys, we were both in the same apartment. We are now...
That makes this really easy to record.
Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and throw it over to the pre-recording of the talk for our next game. But before we do... I do want to bring up something that I don't think I brought up in the pre-talk for our next game, which is we have a YouTube channel now.
Yay! I don't think that YouTube channel existed when we recorded that thing.
It did not. I believe I created it about a week after that would have been recorded. It is completely caught up with the show now. Episodes will be going up on YouTube and on the RSS feed simultaneously, so you'll have a version on YouTube if that's how you want to listen. Or you'll have the usual, like, just feed that feeds into whatever podcatcher you're using. And it also has all the VODs on it, which has been an endeavor. But it has all the ones we have access to. Obviously, some of them are missing, thrown into the void, like your Mario Land VOD is unfortunately missing. But we have a VOD for... We have at least one person's VOD for every game on the list so far. And that's the important part, I think. So be sure to check that out. It's at Smashterpieces. If you just search Smashterpieces on YouTube, it's going to be pretty much every single result. There's some other channel that was called Smashterpieces, but the last video they put up was like 2 years ago, and it's just footage of Smash Wii U. So, oh well.
Man, who else got that name?
I have no idea, but we need to kill them for dominance. So,
check out their video, What the Four Glory. It has zero views.
So, yeah, go check out our YouTube channel. Give us a subscribe. Like some videos. And hopefully, my goal is to be able to get VODs up at least a day or two after the streams happen. I don't know how realistic that goal is, but I will try. And that being said... What will be going up the same day as this will be the VOD for our next game, which we have already played. We'll talk about that in the thing. But the other part is that we might be doing a second sort of stream for the next game, which keep an eye on the Twitter. We don't know if that's actually going to be a thing or not. That episode will be coming out hopefully a week from this one. That seems to be all the housekeeping that I don't think was brought up during the actual pre-show. So I'm going to go ahead and throw it to us from 2 weeks ago.
This is more than 2 weeks ago.
Was it like 3 weeks ago? Whatever.
It was almost exact. It was 4 weeks ago.
Jeez, seriously? Wow. I'm going to throw
three.
It to
It was three. I don't know how to count.
Yeah, it was three.
It's probably four by the time you hear this.
Probably. I'm going to throw it to them, though. So, bye, guys. All right. So, this is being recorded in the past. I don't know
A
how
link
far
to the past, you may say.
Yeah. But we're here to talk about the game that is our next game. It is representing fighter number 60.
60.
Yeah, 60. Ryu. It's Ryu. He's Ryu.
He sure is.
It's the 1991 arcade game Street Fighter II. I don't know if that date's accurate. Hey, guys, there's a lot of versions of Street Fighter II. It has a lot of release dates. It has a billion fucking release dates.
Yeah, boy, he sure does.
There's so many release dates. So, we are recording this in the past because we are actually about to go do the stream now?
They already know this part.
You've heard this part because we explained it in the first
no,
part. Of
no
the
one's
past.
No one's listened to Link to the Past Part 2, or hopefully
you
not
don't know,
3.
You don't
without,
know that.
Without listening to Link to the Past Part 1.
You don't know that. They could be. Maybe they skipped to
Boy,
the
I sure hope this is Link to the Past Part 2.
I also really hope this is just Part 2. Good lord. So, we're going to be playing in a SNES Classic. Specifically, your SNES Classic.
Yeah.
That you bought for Street Fighter.
No, I didn't. I bought it for Link to the Past.
I'm pretty sure you bought it for Street Fighter. You said it to me personally. You were like, I'm buying this for Street Fighter. And I was like, wouldn't it be better to buy it for Link to the Past? And then you said, I would rather die than play Link to the Past on a SNES Classic. And then you threw that SNES Classic in front of a car.
I told the story of how I bought the SNES Classic
that was
on
like 3 weeks
in front
ago.
Of this microphone.
That was like a year ago. So we're playing on Matt's SNES Classic. And I believe
Boy,
that
I
is...
Boy, I hope it's your 2018 will be more here than this.
Let's go... I'm actually going to go look up what exact version of Street Fighter 2 there is. Because, as said before, fuck, there are a lot of versions of this game.
Yeah.
It's a meme how many versions of Street Fighter 2 there are on this fucking thing.
Yep.
This
is a super ultra Street Fighter... The golden.
This is specifically Street Fighter 2 Turbo Hyper Fighting. God, I thought Kingdom Hearts had better.
I've never even heard of this.
Me neither. But it's supposed to be pretty alright. I've been told there are worse versions of Street Fighter we could play, and I don't have to buy this one, so I'm good. But you can buy it on the SNES Classic. You can also
buy it on the SNES Classic.
Or you can buy the SNES Classic to play it. You can also buy an actual version of Street Fighter 2 on Switch. I don't remember what it's called, but you can buy it. I'm not looking it up.
It's like the Anniversary Collection or something.
It's on the Anniversary Collection, too. There's a bunch of versions of it.
Oh, my God.
But there was an actual... The final challenges. There was an actual, like...
Yeah, they, like, remade it for
Switch. Yeah, a remake of Street Fighter 2 that came out on Switch itself. So there are multiple places you can go buy Street Fighter 2 right now. I believe the Anniversary Collection's on fucking everything.
Probably.
You can buy it on PC, you can buy it on Switch, you can buy it on Xbox, PS4, it's
Street
everywhere.
Street Fighter 2 is also probably on Virtual Console. But if you want the cheapest way to play it, go down to your local arcade, put a quarter into the Street Fighter 2 machine, and have a good time.
Legit, the barcade that used to be down by us, you went there when you were here a couple years ago.
Used to be doesn't help anymore.
Well, I'm just saying, like, arcade cabinets still work.
Yeah.
Or still exist because that place had one.
Yeah.
And that's the only time I've touched Street Fighter 2 before today.
That is the cheapest way to play Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, you just go throw a quarter
Unless
in there
bad.
And play Street Fighter 2. Yeah. Well... So I'm kind of worried about this episode, I'm not going to lie, because here are my worries. Let me lay them out. Neither of us are good at traditional fighters. We're okay at some. Street Fighter is not one of those, as far as I'm aware. Neither of us are good at Street Fighter at all.
Hey, I can do some inputs as Ryu in Smash Brothers that I can do, sure you can.
Alrighty, hope you can do that with the D-pad. So
it's easier with the D-pad. I usually play fighting games with the D-pad.
Actually, that's a good point. But the thing is, like, with a platformer or an adventure game like Link to the Past, it's very easy to look at it, for us specifically, to look at it and go, this is what I think it did wrong, this is what I think it did very well, this is what I think worked for this genre. Fighting games, I don't feel qualified to talk about fighting games.
Let's just go in and we'll just talk about our experience with it.
That's basically how I think this is going to go. So I'm going to warn people ahead of time, if you're going to look for, like, in-depth conversations about the design of Street Fighter 2, you're probably not getting that next episode. We don't. This is the one genre on our list that I feel uniquely unqualified to talk about from a design perspective. Cause I don't know.
We'll have a good time.
We'll have a good time. I have no doubt about that. Unfortunately, in case you forgot from the Link to the Past Part 1, if you're hearing this, you've already missed the stream. The stream is going to happen right after we record this. We did want to get this recorded before
there's probably an archive of the stream that you can watch.
Probably. I will try and get that. This one specifically, I will try to work to get up on YouTube. Or if it's...
Post it alongside this episode.
If we're streaming out there, we're probably going to be on your channel.
Okay.
So it'll probably be on... I'm toying with the idea of making a Smash Piece specific YouTube, put episodes and archives on. So we'll have to see if that pans out. But point is, look at the Twitter. I'll post a link when this episode goes up in case you want to watch the stream. We're going to be joined by two other people. It's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to this. I've barely ever played Street Fighter 2. I've played a little bit of Street Fighter 5, a little bit of Street Fighter 4, but I've played maybe two games of Street Fighter 2 on an arcade cabinet once years ago. So, I mean, this is the game that basically birthed the modern fighting game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in Street Fighter 1, combos were not an intended thing.
Yeah, they were an accident.
Yeah, that's how classic Street Fighter is.
So, I know a lot of people were telling me, like, we should switch Ken and Ryu, and I'm going to tell you why we didn't. Because it doesn't matter, we're going to play both games anyways. The only thing that's going to change is the character that's up in the corner during the stream. That's literally all that's going to change. So, it's fine, don't worry about it. I get where you're coming from.
But it doesn't matter.
It does not matter. They're both in both games. It's going to be fine. So, I hope this goes well.
Sure do. Boy.
I don't know. But other than that, you can follow us on Twitter. Again, that's where you'll
and
see
links. We just recorded an outro like 5 minutes ago.
We're at Smash to Pieces. And, yeah, but that came out a week ago. Okay, I hope
more
that
than
came
a week,
out a week
ago.
Ago.
More than a week ago.
I'm being optimistic. You can also follow us on Facebook, again, at Smash to Pieces. And you can follow us on Twitch, both of our separate Twitch channels. I'm Detective Debaga. You are Grimace the Menace. We stream stuff. You stream more than just Smash to Pieces stuff, but I seem to just stream Smash to Pieces stuff.
I haven't done a randomizer in a while.
I might change that up and stream some
non-randomizer.
I might stream some non-Smash
and,
Pieces
and do
stuff
a randomizer.
While I'm on winter break. We'll see.
Like a randomizer.
Man, I hope I never ever do a randomizer now. God, is it Geno fans in here? I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. But
and challenger pack number 2, Geno for fire number 72.
Don't you ever tell me this. So yeah. And you can find us on our website, anondino.squarespace.com. That is Anon as in anonymous. You can find the full list of games that we are playing there in every single post. I literally put the link in every episode post, so nobody has any excuse for not being able to find it at any point ever. It's in every post! So, yeah. We'll see you then. With that, I'm Joe.
And I'm Matt.
And we'll see you next time for our episode on Street Fighter 2.
Turbo Hyper Fighting.
Extreme.
No, not extreme.